the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the name Gardner Minshew sounds like something he'd find in the backyard and chew on. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. Week one is in the books and Gardner Minshew weirdly shredded. I am delighted to be joined, shredded, much like Lenny would shred something. I didn't even think about that when I said it. Anyways, I'm delighted to be joined by my friend, Stephen Ruiz, to preview some of next week's games, talk about what we've seen so far. For those who don't know, Stephen is an NFL writer at For the Win. He also has a great podcast called The Counter. You can check it out. It's from USA Today Sports. Stephen, how's it going?
I am like melting down with the rest of my timeline because the NFL hasn't put the All 22 out and I'm lost. Like I set my week to that and I'm just lost. I don't know what to do. I haven't written a word today.
The number of people I saw freaking out about that really has me rethinking my follows. no, I mean, I get it. I feel like the lack of preseason. I joked last week, Dominique Foxworth, about how this last weekend, and I guess the whole thing, would be like the first time I drank Franzia. Like I was like, I just feel like I got to pace myself or something. And It was overwhelming. And I think it took a lot of people by surprise. Like, I feel like people weren't quite ready for Thursday night and they're still kind of onboarding the season.
I think I tweeted like 1,000 times on Sunday. Like I was just firing takes off and Red Zone, like tuning into Red Zone for the first time was just so overwhelming. I didn't know what to do with myself.
Red Zone would be overwhelming.
We need preseason, not the players. We need preseason.
That's an incredible take that preseason is actually for the fans and analysts and not the players to get used to the NFL season. There are things happening. Like I didn't watch the Gardner Minshew game that I mentioned. I didn't see what Philip Rivers did, you know, cause you're trying, it takes a while to get caught up. I watched Lamar's drives Sunday night, which were awesome, but I didn't watch Baker's drives until this morning. So it's kind of, you know, it takes a second to get caught up on everything. And as usual, I picked a few games I want to talk about, trying to mix up the teams we talk about week to week. And there's some good ones this week. I asked you before we started taping if you thought Patriots Seahawks, which is Sunday Night Football, was the unequivocal best game of the weekend, and you said yes.
Yeah, I think it's like the best game just because it's two good teams, but it's also like the most fun game just because like X's and O's and storylines and Cam's always fun and Cam versus Russ is always fun. I just think that everything's going right for like I cannot wait for this game. I'm kind of like mad that it's on Sunday night, but I guess that gives us the most attention.
As a Panthers fan, you know that Cam has played Seattle approximately 5,000 times over the course of his career. And now he gets to do it as a member of the New England Patriots. Let's start there. We're going to talk about some more games later. Should I give them away now? Because I feel like then if people don't care about the teams, they're listening all the way through. We're going to talk about some more games later, but let's talk about Patriots Seahawks. Let's talk about the aforementioned Cam Newton. So you once told me, I think on this very podcast, that you kind of became more of a Cam Newton fan than a Panthers fan in some ways. Does that mean you're a Patriots fan now? And let's start with that offense. What did you like from what you saw out of Cam?
I'm going to say this. I'm not a fan of either team this year. I'll say that because I'm like rooting for the Panthers to kind of be bad just for the, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. But after the game, it was everything I wanted it to be. Like it exceeded my expectations because I was one of those people that was like, they're not going to run Cam a bunch. Like he's going to run like 3 or 4 times, but it's not going to be the focal point of their offense. And it was the focal point of their offense. Like it wasn't just like runs. It was like runs between the tackles. And that was the play they did most often was like having Cam follow a pulling guard, which is just crazy.
I thought they were going to run him. I didn't think it was going to like break record. Like I don't know. I guess, you know, thinking about the Dolphins and their strengths and weaknesses on defense actually probably should have seen it coming, right? Like,
right.
And that's something I think every NFL team that plays the Dolphins is probably not going to air it out because that's the strength of that team. They're built back to front on defense. But I think the best, like you knew, regardless of how much they were going to run and how much, you know, just power running you'd see out of this team and misdirection, all that fun stuff. I think they led the NFL in play action, I'm pretty sure. But you knew all that was going to happen at some point. What you didn't know, because you can never really know when you're talking about a player you haven't seen play football in a while, is how healthy Cam was and how his arm would look, right? Because it's been a minute. And to my eye, he looked very healthy and his arm looked super sharp. I think the last time we saw him in Carolina, the very beginning of 2019, he played two games. What direction could he not throw in? Left or right? It was one of the two.
It was right. It was one of them. Left foot, and he couldn't throw it.
Yeah, stemming from the foot. So obviously he didn't really throw it outside the numbers very much or test Miami deep, but I thought his arm looked totally fine, super sharp on all of those slants. So I have no concerns about his health based on what we saw on Sunday.
Yeah, I think I tweeted this out on Sunday. Like when he was taking off on those option keepers, like he was accelerating well. And then the few times he did throw it downfield off play action, usually over the middle, like that ball was moving. Like Julian Edelman couldn't handle the one pass. So I don't see any problems with like lingering issues at all. I get the concerns about him maybe getting injured, you know, later on in the season if they keep using him like this. But right now, I think he's 100%.
Well, I guess the question is, how much can, and we can talk about sort of how they match up with the Seattle defense here, how much can you deviate from that game plan? How much can you really add in the passing game, given that, to my eye, I mean, Jacoby Myers didn't do crap. N'Keal Harry, like, the Patriots skill players are still very bad. Who was the tight end who caught Ryan Izzo? I'm not going to pretend like I was aware of that man's existence before. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what can you really do in that offense?
Yeah, like, I came away from the game. I watched that game. I had it on the main screen, and I had the volume up listening to Romo. And I came away from that game, like, not remembering hearing any other receiver's name besides Julian Edelman. There was N'Keal Harry had the fumble, which obviously was a big thing, but nobody else like got open. The Panthers didn't even, I just called them the Panthers. The Patriots didn't even try to test. We shouldn't unpack that. They didn't even test them outside. I don't think he threw a pass like further than 5 yards outside the numbers. Yeah. And yeah, I don't think the offense is going to survive doing that, but the play action game was encouraging. And I think you can add on to the play action game because a lot of their play action was actually like under center, which surprised me. It wasn't off those like read option looks, which is that's what the Ravens do. I was assuming that was going to be the case, but maybe it's, you know, Bill doesn't want to show all of his cards in week one.
Interesting. I mean, based on what you saw, so the Seahawks defense was fine. You know, it's like one of those games where I think the box score is a little misleading because so much of what the Falcons did, and we're going to talk about the Falcons later, came in garbage time. I thought the pass defense, like obviously Jamal Adams was incredibly dominant, and I thought Bobby Wagner played out of his mind and was probably extremely relieved not to have to cover so much. But I thought like the pass defense was just okay. But again, it's like, you know, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, like you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt. The pass rush at the beginning of the game in Seattle looked probably better than some people expected against a sus Atlanta defensive line, but ultimately didn't get that much going. I think they rigged pretty low in pass rush win rate. So like if you're New England, what do you do to attack this Seahawks defense that we know is lacking up front? Very good linebacker group, very, very good all world, incredible safety. What do you do?
I wouldn't be surprised if we see a similar game plan because what the Dolphins ended up doing by the second half was blitzing a lot and putting people on the line of scrimmage. And the Seahawks were actually blitzing the Falcons a fair amount, like early on. I think the numbers kind of got skewed because there was garbage time and then eventually like the Seahawks just backed off. But their blitz rate was 33.9%, and that's like an 8% increase over what they did last year. They rushed Jamal Adams a lot. I think he had 9 snaps where he went after the quarterback. Wagner rushed, I think it was 7 times. They had 4 other rushes by DBs. So they were blitzing a lot, and they were like putting a guy over the center to get kind of dictate protection and get one-on-ones, and then they were doing stunts in games. So they were doing a lot up front, like stuff we really haven't seen them do a lot in the past. So I'm expecting to see more of that. I just don't know. I don't know. I think you're going to have to alter it when you go up against Cam, like rather than going up against Matt Ryan. And I think that's one of the reasons why they kind of, you know, the blitzes didn't always get home, but that's because like Matt Ryan's so good at like seeing those things before the snap and getting rid of the ball. They were picking up like every blitz. So yeah, I think the game plan is going to be the same for the Seahawks, but the Patriots, I mean, maybe they do the same thing. I don't know. I think it's going to be week to week.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm Seattle, I kind of let the linebackers hang back a little bit.
Right.
You know, maybe do some scrape exchange. I think Seattle is pretty well, everything you just described that they did against Atlanta, they will get punished for against a really good passing attack. I mean, Atlanta's a really good passing attack and they did get punished at times, but Atlanta ended up kind of playing from behind. But I don't know. I think it's like a pretty good matchup for Seattle because of what we were talking about with Carolina's offense and sort of their inability thus far to attack over the top. Like you can win in the NFL that way. If your defense is elite, I don't know. I would not characterize this New England defense as elite, even though they had a good game on Sunday against Miami, right?
yeah, that doesn't count.
Obviously, the secondary is still very good. It was actually kind of, you know, similar in some ways to Seattle. I mean, not similar in terms of they weren't like blitzing DBs like that, but, you know, I was curious to see, okay, where's the pass rush in New England going to come from, right? Similarly to like Seattle. And you saw a lot of Chase Winovich. Derek Rivers caught my eye a few times. Josh Uche didn't play, so that was disappointing. But, you know, it's not a dominant group. I mean, not like it was a dominant group last year, but it's definitely... that defense is not, obviously not what they were last season.
Right, but they did add another cornerback. Like, Bill Belichick is just like collecting.
They're different, so deep at corner. Oh my god!
Just different types of corners too. It's not even like they keep getting like just good ones that have the same skill set. It's like he's like collecting Infinity Stones. He's like Thanos. Like he, Jovan Williams shut down Mike Gesicki, who's like a tight end. I mean, he's a receiver like cosplaying as a tight end, but he's got a tight end body, and he was locking him down. So now you have all these different, you know, body types with these cornerbacks that can match up against any receiving core you throw out there. That's like that's the thing I'm most interested in seeing, is like how they match up with the Seahawks receivers. Like who goes on DK Metcalf, who takes Lockett, who takes Olsen, because I think they're going to put a corner on him. I agree with you. Like the front seven is not as good as it was a year ago. But I do think that Bill Belichick is a coach that can scheme around that. I think that's what you see when you like how he's building the roster, is he realizes I cannot scheme around a bad secondary against these passing offenses. Like I need dudes that can lock them down one-on-one on the outside. And then I could get creative, you know, with the front seven. I think that's what's going to happen. That's why I'm not too concerned about their losses on the front seven. The one that I am concerned about is probably Dante Hightower, just because he's like just a leader for that defense. And he's so good at stuffing the run, but I'm fine with their young front seven actually.
I don't make it. You know, J.C. Jackson, I feel like he's not the best one. Stephon Gilmore is, but like people should be talking about him more often. He's really talented. Yeah, I mean, the pass rush was successful against Miami, right? But again, that's Miami. And the run defense was really good as well, which will be tested against Seattle. And you know who I was impressed by? Adrian Phillips. There was all this talk this offseason, oh, we're going to get all these tweeners and... You know, Adrian Phillips is going to help us defend mobile quarterbacks. So he didn't play a ton, but they used him a little bit, sort of, whereas, you know, Patrick Chung opted out, would have been used. So I'll be curious to see what kind of role he plays in this game. All right, I've held back. Let's talk about Russ cooking. I positioned it for the end of this conversation, so I didn't alienate too many people.
I have a bucket of cold water next to me that I'm about to throw on.
No.
You can go first.
No, you go first.
Okay.
My podcast. I'm gonna dunk on you.
Yeah, I'm trying to call the shots.
Throw hot water.
Did they let Russ cook? Like, I know I saw, you know, the early down run pass split, but on his completions, he averaged 2.6 air yards. So did they let him cook, or did they replace those runs with screen passes?
I don't have the EPA of those short screen passes, but I am confident they are better than the early down runs, Steven.
No. I agree with you. I agree. I'm just worried that in week two, they're going to go back to their old ways.
That's a concern, especially against a New England offense. Well, the New England offense, or defense, rather. We know they're going to try to keep everything in front of them, right? You might see a similar usage of Chris Carson in the passing game, a ton of screens. I mentioned this on live today, but Russell Wilson had an expected completion percentage of 75%, which I'm sure is like 20 points higher than he's ever had. It was effective, I guess. I hear what you're saying. It wasn't like, you know, fully cooking to the degree of like, who's an offense that we feel like, the Chiefs are, although whatever, the Chiefs had like 1.2 air yards per attempt well. That seems to be kind of a trend. Have you noticed that this on Sunday, a ton of, offenses went with the short passing game.
I've been talking about that. Like, I think like every game, like only a couple teams didn't, like Carson Wentz threw it pretty far. I don't even know, but
yeah,
a lot of teams were like scaling back their game plan, it seemed like to me.
And it worked. I mean, Goff averaged like probably the lowest yards per day. And we'll talk about that offense. Another spoiler. They're not going to do that every week, but what was heartening was one, Wilson just continued. He looked as sharp as he did last season. Mm-hmm. Lockett and Metcalf. I think Greg Olsen is probably going to be a fairly sizable. People forgot that he's still pretty good. I feel like everyone was talking about him like he's Jason Witten. He's not. Okay. He can actually run routes. Right. At some point they're going to get Josh Gordon. I think my biggest question about the Seahawks, and it remains unanswered, is how good and how explosive does this offense have to be to compensate for the lack of the pass rush? I don't think we know that based on week one, but I think we'll learn a little bit more about them. And I think they win this game.
Yeah, I think we're going to learn more about Seattle than we're going to learn about New England, because we know New England is going to like evolve. What they are now probably isn't going to be what they are in November and December. And that was the case with Tom Brady. And this is a new quarterback they're working in, still trying to learn what he does best. So, I don't think we're going to be able to take anything major away from the Patriots. But Seattle, if they let Russ throw that much again this week, then we could say like Schottenheimer and Carroll have turned things around, and they have, the nerds have won, and they have succumbed to the nerds.
Bullying on Twitter, it works.
It works.
I don't know if we can take that W. Although Brian Schottenheimer did join Twitter a couple years ago, you know, what if he's just been like seething this whole time reading Ben Baldwin's tweets, saying, "I'll show him."
He just has them all bookmarked.
Analytics took a big step forward this weekend in Seattle. All right, let's take a quick break.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
Let's talk about the Falcons and the Cowboys. I've been wanting to talk to someone smart about the Cowboys. I don't know why I said that. I was trying to give you like a compliment, but it ended up sounding like shade to everyone else I've talked to. I didn't mean that at all. But I've been wanting to talk to someone about the Cowboys and what we saw. And I feel like people are probably going to write off the Falcons, but I still think, let's talk about the Falcons offense versus Dallas Stevens first. I still think this Falcons offense is really good. And I thought Matt Ryan was actually quite good on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's always going to be good, but the ceiling, it's got such a high floor because of Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and all those guys that he throws to. But the floor is lowered by Dirk Koetter. I was watching the game on like the condensed version on Game Pass, but I still caught like some of the commentary, and they said like one of the big things for the Falcons was getting better at play action. But Dirk Koetter is one of those, like, we need to set up the run to run play action. If we don't have a run game, we can't run play action. And I don't think it's ever going to work for them. They only ran it 8 times on 56 dropbacks on Sunday.
Jesus, only, really?
Only three teams at a lower rate. So they were talking about play action. They just don't know how to do it. And I think that's always going to lower their ceiling and make things just a little bit harder on Matt Ryan.
I feel like one or two of the times that they ran it was when they went for it on fourth down, and I was so glad they ran it both times. It's like one of those mixed things where whenever I watch a team go for it, I want them to convert to shut people up. And we can talk about Dallas in a second. But, you know, I was rooting for Seattle, so I was like, don't convert. Please run it. Give it to Gurley. He looked fine, Gurley. Like, he looked, you know, efficient, I thought. He's been fine, frankly. That's a whole other thing. I just, you're right. I other than Cutter, like, Ryan looked good. Julio Jones is not of this earth. Calvin Ridley could be a number one on some teams, in my opinion. Hayden Hurst had like a circus catch. He didn't do a ton else, but I think he's good. Russell Gage got like 500 garbage time yards, so whatever. But you're right. There's like a bit of a ceiling on this offense, and the defense, well, again, let's stick with the offense a little bit. I think this Dallas defense, they're going to have an easier time moving the ball on than they did on Seattle, based on what we
Yeah, said. I'm not taking anything away from that game on Sunday night in regard to the defense, because playing the Rams, that's just like fake. Like, the Rams are just like a fake offense that just like doesn't apply to the Reds. Like, and I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying, like, they do so much scheme stuff that you're not going to see week to week. And you're definitely not, like we just said with the Falcons play action rate, they're not going to see any of that this week against Dirk Cutter. So I think we're going to see a big bounce back performance for them. Like, if you look at their PFF grades for their defense, like, everyone's terrible. Like, the linebackers graded out like 20 in the 20s.
Oh my God. The linebackers look like they had never watched the Rams offense. Like, you know, or I mean, Mike Nolte, like, who's the new defensive coordinator in Dallas. Like, it felt like they were totally unprepared. Not that Sean McVay did, we're going to talk about the Rams, did introduce a few new wrinkles to that offense, but they still looked completely unprepared. And frankly, in the same way that was like a massive weakness in Dallas last year, they were always, the pass rush got home. I think that Dallas finished like first in pass rush win rate, which was insane and kind of like a Robert Quinn fluke thing. But they still got beat all the time, and not even over the top. Like, it was the quick passing game that killed them, and they continued to get screened to death.
Yeah, like Mike Nolan, when was the last time he was a defensive coordinator?
2014.
Did he just like? Oh, really?
He was the linebackers coach. That's why I was like, oh, maybe he'll help the line in New Orleans, where the linebackers were really good. But yeah, this is more about scheme than talent, or preparation.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect out of the Cowboys defense like going forward because of Mike Nolan. And it's kind of like Steve Spagnuolo for me last year, where I had no idea what his like scheme even was. I'd never really studied him as a coach. And that's the same for Nolan. I don't know what to expect for them going forward. Maybe it gets better at the end of the year like it did for the Chiefs. But I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue scheme-wise in this game. It's going to be a talent issue because those cornerbacks are suspect.
Well, yeah, what'd you think of Trevon Diggs? He had like that one big tackle. I want to say it was like on the Rams' last drive. He had that third down tackle. At times, he got beat here and there. But it wasn't like an inauspicious start for him. I mean, they are counting on him in a big way.
He almost had a pick too, I think. The ball floated in the air and he like misplayed it. But I wasn't a big fan of him like going into the draft. They were like, Alabama couldn't do some of the stuff they usually do when they have a stud corner. Like, they couldn't play a lot of single high defense. They had to play more two high to kind of protect him. So I'm kind of wary of him going forward. I don't know. Hopefully for the Cowboys' sake, I hope maybe I'll be wrong, but I'm not convinced by anyone in that secondary.
I think they
need Earl. What do you think about Earl Thomas?
Dude, I don't know
do
what's
you think
going
it's just, like convenient or
I don't know what, I mean, I think, that's one of those things where teams looked at the Ravens and they're like, well, they're a good team. And they didn't, because yes, Dallas needs him. Cleveland needs him. I can point to like four teams in the NFL that need Earl Thomas. I think they need their pass rush to get home in a big way in this game. And I wasn't like Alden Smith. I thought looked good at times. He had the face mask, right? On Goff that everyone was mad about. But I was not super impressed by what I saw from Everson Griffin and DeMarcus Lawrence, who, you know, he kind of had a down year last year as well. And you start wondering, wow, they gave him this massive contract. Like, is this pass rush good enough to compensate for a secondary that could be one of the bottom 10 in the NFL?
One thing I will say, I'll defend the defensive line, is that when you're going up against an offense like that, it slows you down. Like, you can't pin your ears back, or you're going to give up, especially when they're throwing screens like that. I think the Rams threw like 8 screens. When they're doing that, it just makes it so much harder. So I think that's going to be better too next year, or next week, especially going up against Atlanta, who, like you said, the offensive line is kind of, you know, suspect.
Well, my whole case for Dallas, my belief that they would be a very good team was based on the fact that I believe this would be one of the better offenses in the NFL. One would think that Atlanta would give them a bounce back opportunity. It was a weird game on Sunday against the Rams because I thought Dak Prescott played pretty well. It just, the whole, like, the look of it, the feel of it, the ways in which Dak was good, the points in which he struggled, the play calling, it just felt like the 2019 Cowboys off it, like in the bad games, right? Not the good games that pulled up their efficiency. Like, it, everything looked kind of the same to me.
Yeah. I don't,
with the worst, like, offensive
towards the end
line
of the year.
I'll throw that, but with the worst.
Yeah. I think Lyle Collins coming back eventually will make that better, but that offense was just so boring. And that's the last thing I expected it to be, was boring, especially with Mike McCarthy, like all this talk during the offseason. Like, he had watched every play of the NFL season last year. He'd studied with PFF. He'd learned all the new tricks that analytics are teaching us. But then, like, they didn't do any of it. They were sub 20% play action rate at pre-snap motion. I think I saw it was 4% of the time, one of the lowest rates last week. It just looked like Mike McCarthy's offense in 2017, 2018, before he got fired from the Packers, or you can throw in, you know, the pre-Kellen Moore offense. But the one thing about Kellen Moore, and I didn't realize this until I read it in a Football Outsiders Almanac, was that, you know, he had that fast start where he was using a lot of pre-snap motion and he was using a lot of play action. But like after week 3, it just all went away. They were like below league average in those rates. So maybe we, you know, crowned Kellen Moore a little too early.
You know, it's funny because it's not like they passed it. Stat I saw was something like Dak's average third down to go was like 8 yards to Jared Goff's 4 point something or the other. And what a contrast, by the way, in coaches putting their quarterbacks in position to succeed in that game. Like you mentioned the motion. I'm pretty sure the Rams used it like 5,000 times in that game. They definitely led the NFL. The thing about that offense, though, like, yeah, so the nerds and our criticisms, some of the things you mentioned, they actually did pass it early, but just because you are passing the ball on early downs doesn't mean you are getting guys open. Like, it feels like they're still counting on the receivers to win too much. And these are like awesome receivers, right? Like, they should win against man coverage. But like, I think of that incredible Dak throw to CeeDee, where he threw it like as he was being pressured. I think it was like a crosser, and it was perfectly placed. Like, Dak can do that, but he shouldn't have to do it all the time. And you know, the Rams defense is good, but I just expected so much more out of this offense based on the personnel they have, and if like that level of offense is not good enough to compensate for this, you know, mediocre defense.
I mean, all these complaints are the complaints we heard at the end of McCarthy's tenure in Green Bay, though. Like,
and
not
the,
doing
and
enough
the,
to
and
help
end of the year in Dallas. Yeah. Definitely not doing that. Sorry.
And like, I know they have great receivers, but you know, Kansas City has great receivers, but Andy Reid still helps them get open. That's not an excuse. And the run pass ratio was good on early downs, but if you look back at the end of McCarthy's time in Green Bay, it was good then. He was passing early in Green Bay, and he was going for it on fourth down at a high rate in Green Bay. So I don't think we could point to that and say, oh, look, he's evolved, because that's what he was already doing. I don't think he evolved at all. I really think he swindled us all. He swindled Jerry Jones into thinking that he was just new man. He's still the same dude.
He swindled PFF.
Right.
Just swept in on his PJ and said bleep blar bloop and everyone bought in.
I feel bad for PFF Moo.
I think so. The Falcons defense is worse than the Rams. I think the upside for Falcons fans, or the positive case, aside from the offense, aside from Matt Ryan looking good and you have great wide receivers, is some of the pass rushers really did flash against Seattle. Granted, it's the Seattle offensive line, right? But of course, Grady Jarrett's awesome. No surprise. But, you know, Tack McKinley and Dante Fowler, like those guys both had some pretty significant pressures. And this Dallas offensive line, as we've discussed, is not impenetrable right now either. So, I mean, freaking even, I don't want to say this out loud, but even like Zach Martin was taking some, I mean, it was against Aaron Donald, so whatever, you know. But did you see that one play where like Aaron Donald pushed both Zach Martin? Oh my God. He like, it was incredible. It was crazy. Speaking of PFF taking, oh no, that's us. That's us taking the L's on Aaron Donald. Anyway, setting that aside, we can find out, I think, in this game, if what we saw out of that Falcons pass rush might have a little bit of reality to it.
I think it does. Like, I like Dante Fowler.
Me too.
Like, he probably shouldn't have been the third pick overall, but, and maybe he would have been better if he didn't tear his ACL in his rookie year, but he's like gotten better every year as a rusher. And then Tack McKinley has always been like one of those guys that can't actually get the sacks, but he gets pressure constantly. And then we know Grady Jarrett is just amazing. So they have some dudes up front. So I would not be surprised if they get some pressure on Dak.
You know, I also like Dante Fowler, and I feel like after the signing, everyone's like, well, of course he had a good year last year. He played next to Aaron Donald. Well, Grady Jarrett is pretty freaking good. He might be one of the most underrated defensive linemen in the NFL. I mean, he's not Aaron Donald, but he's quite good. So, yeah, I agree with you by and large that this is going to be a bounce back game for Dallas, but I think I'm not even going to talk about the Falcons secondary. I refuse to. I think Deion Jones is good, although it was like a screen to Carson, that touchdown that he like biffed in a huge way, but he's still good. I think there's still things about this Falcons team. If I'm a Falcons fan, I'm not throwing in the towel on the season. That's all I'll say.
No, you have a passing game, and that's like,
yes,
that's what the nerds tell you. If you have a passing game, you have a chance in every game.
You also have a field goal kicker who can make every onside kick.
Yeah, why don't they just do onside kicks every time? Their defense is so bad, they're going to give up points anyway. Just do the onside kicks.
That would be such an incredible strategy. They should sign him, Young Hoiku, to like a lifetime contract. Like, imagine just having that guaranteed. And I mean, it did not, but imagine if. Let me ask you this, like hypothetical. If you had a field goal kicker who could do a perfect onside kick every time, what round would you draft him in?
First, do I have a quarterback already? If I had the first pick in the draft and I already had a quarterback, he'd be my first pick. That's like a defense.
Yeah,
you get 11 guys basically. Like, I wouldn't even let him kick field goals. I'd just be like, stand over there on this side of the practice field and practice onside kicks.
Is he the most underrated player in the NFL? Him and Grady Jarrett. Well,
yeah, the Falcons have two of the most underrated players in the NFL, and they're still terrible.
Okay. Let's talk about Rams-Eagles. So we talked a lot about the Rams, and I guess we could start there with that offense against... So this to me is probably the hardest game to pick of the ones where... actually, then last game we're going to talk about, I have a pretty strong idea. But are you buying the bounce back we saw? It's weird because the Rams offense, like, if... feels like they're really dominant and they dominated time of possession in a big way. But they ended up only scoring 20 points. Jared Goff had that pick, and then they kind of came up short in the red zone, which is interesting because red zone offense was like one of the few things they were really good at last year. Are you buying what Sean McVay and Jared Goff are selling?
Not what Goff is selling, but the offensive line was like, it just magically got good again. Like, I was ripping them all offseason because they did nothing to address the offensive line. They didn't sign anyone. They didn't draft anyone. Yeah. It's the same offensive line as last year, and it was like dominant on Sunday night. And that's why everything, like, they got their running game working. They were doing, screen passes off that. They were using motion. It was like 2018 Rams all over again with the offensive line included. So, yeah, I'm buying it. If they can continue to do that, then I don't see why they won't be good again.
Yeah, the offensive line, I actually kind of wasn't surprised that they didn't add anyone. You know, last year they were really banged up. There were guys moving all over the place. Aaron Cromer, the Rams offensive line coach, places like a big emphasis on cross training his linemen. It's a little Rams preseason knowledge for you. might as well make it for something this year. But it felt like even with that, you know, the Evans and Edwards, Bobby Evans, David Edwards, the rookies were playing all over the place. And it felt like, and I honestly have no idea what happened to Rob Havenstein last year. It was like insane. Kind of wondered if he was hurt, to be
honest. I think he was.
Yeah, it was not right. So in some ways, I wasn't super surprised. And of course, that offense, when it is clicking, when defenses are buying the deception, it makes the life of the offensive line much easier. And of course, when you're blocking for generational running back Malcolm Brown, you can't be stopped.
Yeah, I will say one thing. Apparently, Joseph Noteboom, who I still don't think is a real person, apparently he didn't play well, and he was one of the like sore spots last year. He really stuck out when you watched him on film before he got hurt, because he was replacing Saffold, who's just a monster. There was no replacing him. I think that was like the biggest mistake they've made personnel wise in the last couple of years, was letting him walk. But it feels like they schemed around him better this time, so I don't think he's going to be an issue going forward, even if he doesn't, you know, bounce back and play better.
And I thought the other guard, Austin Corbett, played better or played pretty well. And Whitworth was like awesome in this game. So, yeah, I think we all now have like a pretty firm grasp on Jared Goff, who he is, the situation he needs to thrive in. And you saw that. Right. That's what it looks like. What about the Eagles pass rush? Do you anticipate that presents like a stiffer challenge than Dallas? There's some injuries. Derek Barnett is out. I think Vinny Curry is hurt too.
Yeah, he got hurt. It's hard to say, because that Cowboys line was supposed to be really good and they didn't play well. So I don't know if it was, you know, was it more of the Rams or was it the Cowboys just not playing well? But I thought the Eagles defensive line actually looked pretty decent last week, considering, like, you know, the losses you just covered. Like, Malik Jackson looked really good rushing inside. Josh Sweat had a bit of a breakout game. I think he had a sack and a couple of pressures. So, and then Fletcher Cox is just Fletcher Cox. So I'm not worried about the Eagles defense. Like, when I watched that, did you watch the Washington game yet?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. The defense was fine. They put up 27. It had nothing to do with the defense.
I expected that to look so much worse, but the defense was fine. Like, Darius Slay pretty much locked down McLaurin. I think the one reception he gave up was like a quick slant and he was in off coverage. So it wasn't even like his fault. Mm. But I will say this, Jalen Mills is not Malcolm Jenkins.
I wrote down his name and like circled it 20 times.
That first touchdown too, it was like kind of like a Ramsey type play where they like did like some jet motion, and then I don't know if it was play action, but Jalen Mills didn't know who to cover, and like they just gave up a wide open pass to a tight end, and then everyone immediately looked at Jalen Mills. That's how you can tell like who busted the coverage. Everyone immediately looked at him.
Another team that could use Earl Thomas. Brandon Graham also was concussed. I don't know what his status is right now. I mean, God, the Eagles are so banged up. We'll talk about the offense, but like they lost one of their corners, Craig James, so they're down to like 1, 2, 3, 4 corners. Yeah, I guess my concern against this Rams offense is the weakness of this Eagles defense. I mean, the primary weakness is that they totally did not give a shit about linebacker, much to the anger of Eagles fans when the Jalen Hurts pick came in. And, you don't want to play the Rams without a linebacker.
That's a good point.
So
I didn't see their linebackers make one play on Sunday.
Gary. Duke Riley, they drafted one, but I didn't see him.
A couple of them later, and I don't know if they're gonna play.
You know that meme you do with Kyle Shanahan looking at the microscope? I feel like that's Sean McVay this week looking at the Eagles linebackers.
Right. Yeah, I think that's gonna be the big matchup. Like, if they could just like hold up a little bit, I think the Eagles defense has a chance, because everything else about the Eagles defense, like you said, is pretty good. Just Jalen Mills don't bust any coverages.
On a scale of Dan Orlovsky to Who's a Carson Wentz hater? 10. How worried are you about Carson Wentz? I realized that was an exact scale I gave you.
Right. I'm going to say like a 4. Like, I'm not too far off from Dan. Probably is right.
Wait,
now.
So you're positive. You're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Explain. I'd love to hear this.
Because I don't think he looked worse than he did last year. And I think you just have to accept he is who he is at this point. He's going to hold on to the ball too long. He's going to try to make too many plays. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. I thought the issue was the coaching staff on Sunday. Ooh. Honestly, like, the turnovers were bad, obviously, but Doug Peterson got outcoached by Jack Del Rio in the year 2020. And that's just unacceptable.
I thought, okay, so, well, God, he had like the worst QBR of like the last.
No, he was bad. He was
bad. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we know why. He was so awesome, by the way, those first couple of drives. And then, you know, he did the hero ball thing. He made stupid, I mean, all he had to do was game manage that game to the end. And my concern is like, at this point, it seems like he's constitutionally incapable of doing that. I think there are things you can do as a coach to protect him a bit. One of the things I thought they would do, so they hired Rick Scangarello, who's last with Denver, right? From the Kyle Shanahan tree. And his thing is booting quarterbacks out, and they really didn't have Wentz, who's very good outside the pocket, on the move that much, which surprised me.
Right. I had that in my notes too. Like, they didn't move him around at all. They did nothing to mitigate that pass rush. And that was one of the issues I had. And I actually expected the offensive line to look worse when I watched it. But for me, it was more like protections and like schemes. Mm. It was schematic breakdowns. Like, Boston Scott had a play where he didn't block a blitzing linebacker.
I saw the right tackle. Right up the middle. That was rough.
Yeah, the right tackle did something where I think he like picked up the outside rusher and let Ryan Kerrigan just go free on the inside. So I think it was a combination of a lot of things. Like, don't get me wrong, the offensive line is not good. And Chase Young. Do you know what it was like? It's like in the UFC when like there's like an up and coming fighter who's like 8-0, and they like throw him up against like a guy that used to be a champion, but it was like 5 years ago. Like, he has clout still, but you know this young guy is going to embarrass him and build up the hype. That's what it was like. It was embarrassing.
It was like when I try to use the phrase "keep it 100." That's what that was like. Like, it was so like, God, it made me so aware of my own mortality watching Jason.
It was a human. How do you do, fellow kids?
Oh, so awful.
And they tried to help him. Like, they tried to chip Chase Young with a running back, and the running back, like, Chase Young did like a spin move on Peters, and the running back like tried to chip him, and the running back just bounced off him, and Chase Young got the sack. They tried to block him with a tight end. It just wasn't working.
Turns out having all that speed, not always useful if you don't have enough. I mean, in the Eagles' defense, they didn't know they would lose Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson. When's Lane Johnson back? 3 weeks?
He's back next week, I think.
Oh,
he's
God. He's cannot come week. Soon enough for this team. They didn't know that they'd have this domino effect across their offensive line. And I think that's why a lot of this should be taken with a huge grain of salt, right? Because, I mean, you know, it's not like they were down to, you know, who did? Matt Pryor didn't play too. I thought he was going to be their starting, right? I mean, they lost the right tackle who started the game, whose name is escaping me at some point.
It doesn't matter. He's not going to play.
I mean,
again.
Yeah, he's not going to play again. Like, the running backs had nowhere to go. Of course, they didn't have Miles Sanders. I mean, now as we're like saying all this, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let Carson live this week.
Right. It was a bad game plan. Also, I have a Doug Peterson take.
Oh, God. What is
it? We do not talk enough about how he's Dan Quinn. He's offense Dan Quinn. Let me lay it out for you.
Okay. Yeah.
I have it written down.
Okay. Because he doesn't look like he could fight in the WWE.
Right. He worked as a coordinator for a big name coach who specializes in coaching his side of the ball, like Quinn,
yes.
Carroll, Peterson, Reed. Mm-hmm. He had a hot start in his first year as a coach. Like, I think the Eagles started 3-0. Dan Quinn started like 5-0, and then they ended up going like 7-9. Next year, both of them went to the Super Bowl against the Patriots. One team won the Super Bowl, you know. Brandon Graham had the strip sack of Brady. The Falcons couldn't get a stop and, you know, might have blown a little bit of a lead. Then the next year, injuries derailed both teams, but they somehow make the playoffs and upset like an upstart team. The Eagles beat the Bears. the Falcons beat the Rams. I think that was McVay's first year. And then, you know, like the next year, it's just inconsistency on their side of the ball, and they mix up their staff every year. Like the Eagles have like 14 different offensive coordinators.
Was it so, Press Taylor is the passing game coordinator, right? Or the like Skangs. They always have like all these weird roles. I can't even tell who's doing what. I hate that.
It's like a college coaching staff. Have you like looked at a college coaching staff, and there's like a coordinator for like every facet of playing football? There's like a coin toss coordinator. like that's what the Eagles have.
Yeah, and like I love Frank Reich. John DeFilippo got a W with Mitch Trubisky, so maybe that's where all the brain power was. Yeah, I mean. You're not wrong. Like there's definitely reason for frustration in some of these game plans. I mean, I think it's been hard to judge Doug Peterson because they've been so banged up, right? Like last season, I was like, well, you know, a plumber's playing wide receiver. Like, can we really take it out on him, or, you know, quibble with, and actually in some cases, I thought he did do a reasonable job of game planning around the injuries, but I did not think that in this game. And I'll be curious to see what that plan is against a Rams defense that I thought looked really good. I actually, you know, in the Rams Cowboys game, that might have been the unit that surprised me the most on both sides. I guess, like I said, I expected Dallas to be more explosive, but I was really impressed by the Rams secondary. I know everybody's kind of highlighting the Jordan Fuller stop. But, and of course, Jalen Ramsey, but I thought John Johnson, who's like been good for a minute, although he's had some ups and downs, I thought he was really good. He was flying all over the place. Darius Williams, their other cornerback, played well. You know, they have a new defensive coordinator in Brandon Staley. When they let Wade Phillips go, everybody kind of raised their collective eyebrows, but the early returns are good.
Yeah, I don't think the Eagles are going to test their weakness, which is like they're like built like the Eagles, kind of, where their weakness is that second level of the defense. I don't even know who's playing linebacker for the Rams right now, but I don't think it's going to get tested in this game. I think it will against the 49ers. I think that might just be a disaster. I'm definitely making the meme of the linebackers that week.
Well,
but, yeah, like I think when you have Jalen Ramsey, just calling a defense just makes things, man, so much easier. I have a little bit of a rant. Like, I'm tired of the Ramsey slander. I feel like people think he's overrated. He's underrated. I still think he's the second best cornerback in the league, and I will die on that hill.
I think he's phenomenal. I will say, if you had watched week 3 of the Rams preseason, you would know that Mike Kaiser is starting when he got hurt last year. And he was fine. He's not as good as Corey Littleton, who they let go, which I think was a huge L and is going to haunt them at times. Maybe in this game, honestly, against those tight ends. But you know, it was really good, Dallas Goedert. I always, it's Goddard, right? I always worry about saying his name wrong. He kind of like outplayed Zach Ertz in this game.
He definitely got more targets, and that might be like contrived, like
money
with the little drama going on there.
Yeah, I know. I hear about that drama. I want to see. I thought if I had to pour my own cold water. You poured it on the Seahawks. I'm going to pour it on my beloved Rams. I'm not totally convinced by that pass rush, which had its moments in against Dallas, right? And like people were like, "Well, Leonard Floyd, he's pretty good." didn't look like it to me. I don't know. We'll see. That's been like the ongoing, never-ending question or search, I guess, in Los Angeles is: can we find a defensive end or outside linebacker? They went through four to take advantage of Aaron Donald, and they have not, right? I mean, Floyd obviously had a bunch of, or pardon me, the aforementioned Dante Fowler had some sacks last year, but they haven't had any guy like dominate really. And I'm not convinced by what I saw from Leonard Floyd or Samson Ebukam in this first game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know they started to get some pressure at the end, especially against the right side of the line, but the Cowboys were just so banged up. I don't even think you can count that as. Didn't the starting the right tackle, I think it was a rookie, didn't he end up getting hurt too? Like, it wasn't just Collins out, it was like their third string right tackle,
the guy whose name I couldn't remember. that was Philadelphia, in Dallas. Yes Irving, right? No, Fleming or Irving.
Yeah,
the Camerons. Yeah, they're in trouble, man. That Lyle Collins injury too, it like snuck up on us, like nobody noticed it. And then when it was finally, it was like kind of rumored, and when it was reported, I was like, wait, this is a big deal. He's really good.
That's what happened with the Danielle Hunter injury. Like,
oh, totally.
Like, just out of nowhere, just he's on IR. Like, this short-term IR is just a killer for people that are trying to, like, stay up to date with the league because it just comes out of nowhere.
Complaining about the All-22, complaining about the short-term. It's all about you. No, yeah, I think a lot of these, like, everything about the season kind of crept up. And a lot, there were a few injuries that took me by surprise. Also, like, it's with no preseason, you're like, who's that on the offensive line? All right, I guess. Austin Corbin, all right, you look pretty good. All right, let's take a quick break.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
All right, Steelers Broncos is the last game that I would like to talk about. And I want to start with Big Ben, who made his comeback, his return on Monday night, very late. And at first, I think it was like coming off of the Breeze-Brady game. I was like, man, all the old dudes suck. I guess Aaron Rodgers is kind of old and he didn't suck. He was good. And Matt Ryan's kind of old too. Whatever. Anyways, but it became clear to me very quickly that he was just kind of shaking off some rust with some of those overthrown screens and such. And I thought he looked fine. I know that's not a very definitive assessment of Roethlisberger, but as I've been saying all offseason, the defense is so good. All he needs to be is fine. Oh, and the skill players look great.
Right, right. The game plan was kind of weird to me. Like, it reminded me of a 2017 Jaguars game plan where they were just throwing like shallow crossers and drags and then taking the occasional deep shot. I don't think it has anything to do with Ben. Like, it obviously had to do with Bortles for the Jaguars, but I think that just plays to their skill player strengths. Like, you throw it at Juju and you let him do stuff after the catch. Deontay Johnson has like punt returner type skills. And then you have Chase Claypool and James Washington. Those are guys you just take shots downfield, and it worked. I think they averaged 0.44 EPA per play. So you know, keep going with it.
Yeah. I think like both of the touchdowns were off of rub routes, if I remember correctly. One of them, Juju was springing the guy, and the other time he scored, I might have that wrong. But I got a little too excited after that first Chase Claypool catch. I was like, the Steelers found another one. And then, of course, it was his last catch of the day. But that was a sick catch. Tight ends are good. You know, Benny Snell looks great after James Conner got hurt. But I guess we should probably take all of this with a giant caveat that they were playing the Giants defense, right? And I think the Broncos defense, I this is another thing I tweeted. Watching the Broncos defense, I was bummed because my feeling was like, if they had Von Miller, they'd be really good.
Right. Like, and they were like effective, I guess. But the whole time I was like, I was expecting a lot more out of this defense. Vic Fangio's second year, his defenses usually take the leap. But then I kept forgetting that Von Miller was out. And like, that's why it doesn't look as dominant as I expected it to look. And I that's my issue. I thought the defense had to be really good this season for them, because I know they were getting some like playoff sleeper love in the offseason. I don't think that's going to be the case after the Von Miller injury. And then
we'll talk about
the offense. What do you think about the okay, we can wait.
Well, let's talk about it.
I got some takes.
All right. Yeah, so I thought Drew Lock looked basically how he looked at the end of last season, only he was playing a better defense. I mean, I think I told you my big takeaway watching three of those Drew Lock games was that Noah Fant's sick. Also, why'd they stop throwing to Noah Fant in the second half of this game? What happened? I haven't rewatched it to see. He was targeted like 6 times or something in the first half, crushing it, and then disappeared in the second half. I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason, but probably something that the Titans defense did. But, you know, he is very good throwing on the move, which he was at the end last. He's super athletic. There's nobody would question that. And he, you know, he is really good at keeping his eyes downfield. he's accurate too when he throws on the move. But, you know, the deep ball's terrible. And it really does feel like a processing thing. Like he's just kind of like either a tick slow or a tick early most of the time. You didn't really see him go past his first read in the structure of the offense. I mean, they gave him a baby offense to run.
It was a Jimmy G offense. It was the Jimmy G offense. Yeah. Like, everything over the middle, right in front of his face. He didn't have to process things, like you said. Like, it was a lot of play action. Throw it over the second level of the defense if they bite. And he's got that Josh Allen thing going, like you mentioned. Like, his deep ball is so bad, but he has
so bad.
Paradoxical. That's why I'm down on him. I was not high on him coming out of last year because of the processing stuff. Like, he never just showed it to me, like, that he was going to be able to live in that quick game world. And if you can't hit on deep balls, you have to live in that world. I don't think you can build an offense around it if it's not consistent.
Well, I think with Courtland Sutton in the game, it's more explosive. And, like, you know, poor Jerry Jeudy. I feel like those drops earned him a lot of very unfair hatred already.
He's so fast and shifty. Like, he reminded me of like a receiver version of Alvin Kamara when he was in open field. Like, no, like it didn't seem like anyone could tackle him and score him up.
That one route where he like totally stopped on a dime, was that like in the fourth quarter or something? Mm-hmm. I gasped when he did that. I mean, first game jitters, a rookie. I think with Court and Sutton, they can kind of, and if they continue to keep Noah Fant involved, I think they can get something going, but probably the defense isn't good enough. And by the way, now he gets to play the freaking Steelers.
Who just blitzed the hell out of Daniel Jones. It was mean.
It was mean. Totally. I felt bad for him. And to his credit, you know, on a couple drives, he did a nice job responding to it, but they blitzed him 61% of the time, which is the second most of any defense over the last 2 years. They also got incredible pressure when they only rushed 4, which is something consistent with last season. I mean, all season long, I've been saying, you know, the Steelers defense, they had 37 turnovers last year. That's the most in like 5 years. They're going to regress. Of course, they go out and immediately get 2 turnovers. They're playing Daniel Jones. But like, they have actual aliens on their team. Okay. Like, yes, there's going to be regression. Yes, good offenses will punish them for some of that. I mean, if they were to blitz at that rate against, like, you know, other quarterbacks. But, like, TJ Watt and Bud Dupree both look like they were shot out of a cannon on every single play.
Right, like, Bud Dupree was just on the backside of runs. He's dangerous. Like, that's where he's at his best, just pulverizing running backs. And the thing is, like, they were blitzing a lot, but they didn't really give up a lot of deep passes outside of that one that went for the touchdown. And I think that was just like a great play call by Jason Garrett, which, you know, didn't happen a lot on Monday night. But so I'm wondering, are they going to do that to Drew Lock? It seems like they have to, right? Like, that's what you just do it against young quarterbacks.
Well, you definitely want Drew Lock throwing deep. <He's
not laughs> right.
I think. I mean, Daniel Jones is mobile too. If I was scared, I would have had Jones moving even more always. I think Drew Lock, they're going to build a ton of mobility into that game. Denver is into this game plan. And like you know, like when Saquon had that one screen that went for like 27 yards or something, I don't know, his one successful play, and I'm totally not bitter as a Saquon fantasy owner. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get their backs out in space, but yeah, I you're right. I mean, they're good at every level. I don't like. Let me ask you this: do you think this could be the best defense in the NFL?
Like, I was supposed to rank defenses. I never got around to it. I never wrote it, but they were my number one defense.
Well, there you go. You just saved yourself an assignment by revealing it.
Yeah, I didn't have to write 3,000 words on that. But
so let me ask you again. Okay, I know I just used that phraseology, but if this is the best defense in the NFL and Ben looks like that was a New York Giants, but like Ben looked pretty fine to me. His arm looked fine. Where does this team to you stack in the AFC? Are they the third best team in football?
I think that's their ceiling. I think they're at their best. They can compete with the Ravens. I do believe that. Like, unless Lamar just continues to ascend, but we're not going to talk about that. But the thing with Ben is, is he going to stay healthy for 16 games? Is his arm going to stay strong for 16 games? Like, yeah, he was on the sideline with like a Gronk arm sleeve, like heating pad. Dude, like,
I have never been more stressed than when they showed Mason Rudolph warming up. I was like, oh, I know. I was, I cannot have this, the Mason Rudolph experience again and watch this offense. I cannot watch it. And
speaking of Mason, has any fan base ever given up on a young quarterback that quickly?
I mean, has any fan base had both of their backup quarterbacks date the winner of The Bachelor? No. I it was like weird. This is how I knew that I hadn't seen Ben in a while. Like, if it hadn't been a year, I would have been like, oh, it's Ben Roethlisberger. He's just doing his Ben Roethlisberger drama thing. But I like forgot. I was like, oh no, Ben, are you okay? Which you know, he's fine. But yeah, that's you're right. That's it. It's just about the arm and whether it holds up, because, you know, I mean, the offensive line is concerning with the injuries, but they do have a nice skill group and defense is very good. I expect them to win this game and I expect them to come in second in the division and make the playoffs, because I just think the Ravens and the Chiefs are just like in a different class from the rest of the NFL to me right now. And that includes the NFC.
Right. It's kind of like the quarterback rankings with Patrick Mahomes, where he's just an alien. He's just, you don't even count him. But my big concern with the offense, even if Roethlisberger stays healthy, is where the big play is going to come from, because I would not want to rely on James Washington and Chase Claypool for those. And is the running game going to be good all year? And they don't use any play action. So that's not even going to help them get those big plays in the passing game. They don't use it. They've never used it with Ben. They didn't use it last year either. I don't know what, maybe it's just a Pittsburgh thing, but they didn't use it on Monday night either.
Yeah, I think you're like, that is against other defenses. You might see that offense get more congested. I agree. Congested, such a gross word to describe an offense. All right, as always, let's wrap up with some questions.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Question number one, rank the teams in the NFC West.
Seattle, San Francisco, Arizona. No, Los Angeles, Arizona. I'm going with Charlotte. Like,
You're not buying the Arizona?
No, I just think it's a great division. Yeah. I'm just not ready to buy them, though. Like, that defense is not that, I don't think it's going to be good. And I think Jimmy G just kind of like crap in his pants late in the game kind of helped them out. And they had like some fluky plays with like a punt block. And I think they had another one. So I'm still a big, you know, Cliff fan, Kyler fan, but the defense just isn't good enough for me.
Rank the quarterbacks in the NFL or NFL. Geez.
I was like, how much time you got?
You're like, I'd like to leave. Wilson, Kyler, Goff, Jimmy.
The last two are the ones on. I think I'd rather have Jimmy.
Really?
Yes.
There might be a little bit of recency bias creeping into my rankings here. Question two. We talked a lot about the Steelers. Was that the Daniel Jonesiest game that ever Daniel Jones'd?
Oh, yeah. In that one drive in particular where it was like, whoa, this Daniel Jones guy's got it. And then like 2 seconds later, he like throws an underhand. I don't even know what it was, but it just like popped up in the air like 10 yards. And I think a defensive lineman picked it off. And I tweeted like, never tweet until the end of the drive with Daniel Jones. You're going to look like an idiot. I'm telling you.
There were like four Steelers defensive linemen just sitting there. It was like the Rams meme that like in, you know, where the defensive backs. Yeah. My mentions were a wild place during that drive. What a roller coaster. Just the constant apologize to Daniel Jones, followed by you were right about Daniel Jones. Like, you know what? I was not right, but I also don't have to apologize. Like, you know, like I believe, and I'll talk about him more in depth at some point. I believe he is both better than I thought and certainly was. I mean, dude is fearless. And right. Sometimes it is not right how fearless he is. And he
was I was actually a pre-draft Daniel Jones fan. Like I'm on record. I have like articles up. So I'm right there with you. I think he's good. I was not surprised by his
good. Season. You think good?
Not good, but you know, like a decent young quarterback.
Well, he's Jameis.
Right. I mean, I always like Jameis, so I have a type.
All right. I'm not gonna say what I was about to say. All right. right now, okay. So, in a shocking development, the good quarterbacks are still good. We barely talked about you know, Lamar Jackson, unreal, unconscionable. That was like the game. I rewatched that, like I told you, after Sunday Night Football, and I was just like giggling the whole time. Some of those throws I didn't even know he had in his bag. Mahomes is Mahomes. I just love like Mahomes didn't even have to try on Thursday. That was hilarious. And then Russell Wilson is cooking. Who do you think is your MVP pick right now?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I'm going Russ. That was my preseason pick, so I'm sticking with it. And I was even throwing the idea out there, this might be the year they let him cook just because of their personnel. And we saw it in week one. So I'm sticking with Russ. I think the Seahawks are going to be the best team in the NFC West. I think they're going to make the NFC title game.
Got it. You can come on this podcast anytime. I feel like the Russ has like MVP is such a narrative award, and I feel like Russ has the narrative right behind him because everyone's like, we never got an MVP, but it was really unfair, you know. So he's got that working for him. Question four: what is a thing that you suspect based on week one that you were wrong about?
I would say the Rams, but we already covered that, like the offensive line. I did not think that the Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins connection was going to be that good from week one. And I didn't think they were going to spoon feed him the ball like that. But like that was like everything you would want to see from a Cardinals fan. Like he was just fit right into that offense. And I think after the first half, they were getting too cute. Like they were doing too much scheme stuff, too many screen passes. And you can't do that against the 49ers defense because they just rally to the ball. But in the second half, I think that's what the Cardinals offense is going to look like going forward. And DeAndre Hopkins just makes everything better about that offense.
I am not going to apologize to Gardner Minshew yet.
I should have answered that. The Jaguars the answer. Why didn't I say that? Yeah, the Jaguars.
He was really freaking good. Yeah, I'm going to give it. I mean, or maybe the Colts defense is bad too, which I kind of feel like I overrated them. But that's going to be one I'm going to sit on for a couple weeks before issuing my formal apology. Speaking of apologies, as always, final question comes from Lenny, my dog. Yeah, I feel like this makes sense. He wants to know if you saw that Josh Allen threw for 300 yards on Sunday and if you're going to apologize.
Did Lenny watch the game? He had three, like two fumbles and three would-be picks and missed John Brown wide open. John Brown's always open, but you know who can't hit him ever? Josh Allen.
Bills fans, ignore the hater. Don't tweet at him. Leave him alone.
He was better. I'll say that. Besides those, he had a couple LOL plays, but besides that, he was a much better quarterback, and I was surprised.
You know what I highlight? You know, and really, Bills fans don't like it when you do this, or some don't, but yet again, Dable Hive, man. I just feel like
they were doing some crazy stuff too.
Dude, he's evolving and it's pretty cool. All right, Steven, as always, thanks for coming on.
Anytime.